describe as the, see if this works, I guess it does. Yeah. I don't think this is working too well over here. Let me come over here just a second. The state of Texas, the mountains coming down. This is the area that is generally considered to be South Texas, this area right in here. The Rio Grande and the Devil's Rivers, the rivers coming into it, the Guadalupe on this side and the coastal plain, coming up just about into the Edwards Plateau in this area. This is what is generally considered to be South Texas, and we also take into that consideration Northeast Mexico because the Rio Grande was a boundary, but certainly the environment was much the same there. We're going to be talking, as we go through these various sites and we look at various collections, we'll be talking about different age groups. We'll talk first, the oldest about, we'll call the Paleo-Indian type of points or tools, the period of time would be. And these periods run from 6 to 2500, 2500 to 1000, 1000 to 300 BC. There's a transitional period here between the archaic period and what is termed the late or the prehistoric period. That's the period right prior to the contact time when the Europeans first made contact in 1492, some 500 years ago. The reason this is a transitional period, about this period of time, the bow and arrow came into existence in South Texas. Prior to that time, before the bow and arrow, game and warfare was carried on with spears, with spear-type things, using what is called a spear thrower. Now, let's look at, before we move just a minute, Francis, look at these points. The reason we can assign dates to these is that these points over a period of many areas and many different tests have been found in association with either charcoal or bone. The bone in association with these points have been, or the charcoal has been identified by age, by carbon dating, radiocarbon dating, so that we can pretty well, after those have been done a number of times and that point is found within a certain age area, we're able to determine when we find that point at what period of time we're talking about. Because trends changed as the years went through, just as trends change today, the hemline or what have you. Okay, let's move on to the next thing. I'm not sure that Indian looked like this, but what I want to call your attention to is this instrument he has in his hand. This is a spear with a spear point, a large projectile point, and he's using what is called a spear thrower. This is this instrument through here, from here to here. The spear lays in that, and it is, actually becomes an extension of his arm, enables him to throw the spear further and further and straighter with more accuracy. Okay, next. These are chip stone artifacts, and we'll be talking about them, and I have brought some artifacts that resemble these pieces, and also some I see are up here on this collection. This is a gouge or an as, used for probably woodworking. This is probably a hand chopper used to chopping bone apart, and another either an end scraper used for scraping hide. And as I said, most of them are hafted, and here you see one that was found in the dry cave area, dry caves that were found just like this. Next, please. Here is a perforator or drill made on an old projectile point, a knife, an end scraper, a side scraper, a burn, for marking deeply on bone. And here's another type of scraper. It was probably hafted, of course. All of these were hafted or handheld. Next, please. This tool is a very distinctive tool in the South Texas area called a clear fork gouge. And it was a hafted piece of equipment, hafted here and much like a chisel. And you can see the bit on these in cross section. They were used for woodworking or for hide processing. See, next one. No, okay, we're through there now, Tommy. You can take that one off. Mm-hmm. Now let's move around the state a little bit, and Ray, if you'll give me some. Okay, I'll have to stand. Let me see where I can stand. Maybe I can sit down.
On the other side, maybe by 18.
I think I can sit down right here.
Yeah. We're getting you a drink of water.
Though. Yeah, please. I need to have them. Babe, Francis, will you go out and go out in the car and get me a cough drop out of them. Cool.
Go out there.
Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry. I've
been about a little outstation wine.
Let's be fine. On the coastal plains of South Texas, looking at this scene from the water, thank you, you'll find that these large shell accumulations in this area are what is very similar to what we find here in this part of the country as the accumulation of burned rock limestone. This is where they lived, and as they ate the oyster or conch, whatever the shell might be, it accumulated as they were there. Next. Here's a close-up look of a section much like that as it has been eroded from the side of the bluff. Next. Another look at a similar type bluff with the with it showing as it erodes there. Next. Here's a look at, and you'll notice that most of these are right on the bay, usually with an estuary coming here in a protected location, and the erosion of this limestone, of this bluff here, sand bluff, with the accumulation of shell. That accumulation will be that deep from here down there, that deep in extended period of time of occupation site there. Next, please. Here are some artifacts taken from a coastal site. The flint arrow points and some of the knives, and then your shell tools. These are shells made out of, there's a scraper of some sort here on the right. Well, that appears to be a knife of some sort or a saw blade that perhaps a lady hung around her neck on a piece of, I think, to cut weeds with or cut grass with or cut some type of plant with. Here, a shell that has been perforated, probably used as a necklace or as a decoration. Next, please. These are the columella, or the middle portion of the conch shell. They were used for tools of some sort, even perhaps for some type of decoration, for some body jewelry. Next, please. We move further inshore now. This is a little bit, this is a site south of Victoria, still known as the sandy loam soil. The excavation there, it's not very easy to dig, but very hard to keep control with. Next. And this is some of the pottery that came out of that site. This is a pottery that is made indigenous to the coastal region. It's called, in some of the Rockport ware, it's decorated with asphaltum, natural asphaltum that washes up on the beaches from the bottom of the ocean. And it's incised. It's a sandy type pottery, probably used for carrying water and or for alligator oil. Alligator oil was a very precious commodity in that part of the country. Those of you who have lived on the coast or have been to the coast in the marshy area knows what the mosquitoes are like down there. And the alligator oil was used to keep the mosquitoes off. Next. Here's some olivella shells that were pierced, perforated, and were probably used for jewelry. Strung on hair or cord of some sort, or leather, and used as jewelry. Next, please. Let's see if we can focus that just a little bit. Okay, all right. That's a site. This is a site on up, coming up, moving up the end of the country near San Antonio, a rock shelter type. You'll see this area right in here. The cave goes back in there. Next, please. This is the area directly in front of that cave where they lived not only in the cave, but out in front of this. This is an accumulation of burned limestone. It looks like that has not been excavated very properly. Perhaps it was dug into to find artifacts without any scientific control over it. But this was out in front of that cave. Next, please. This is a view of that cave looking from a little bit of distance with the burned rock midden being in this area down in here, the midden area right below here. Next. These are some of the artifacts of the poor picture. It's not the focus of the photography is there bad. This is some of the artifacts that came out of that particular cave. Next, please. We'll move on up a little bit further into the part of the country. This is what a burned rock midden looks like from the surface. As you'd walk along the ground, you'd see these little pieces of chopped up, burnt, fractured limestone. I have a box of them over here on the table so that you may look at them and understand what we're talking about when we say burnt, cracked limestone. You can look at after the refreshment time and give you an idea of what we're talking about. Next. That was the same site. This was taken with, I'm not real sure why that got shredded unless it was taken with infrared. But this is the depth of that site, and this has been a controlled excavation taken down by meter by meter and with good depth, horizontal and vertical controlling. But that is a very deep site, the top of the bluff being way up here and the bottom, they're not even yet to it, down to the bottom yet. That's probably a meter, so it looks like about 4 meters in there, perhaps, or 3 meters. Next, please. This is the same site with the showing the profile of them coming down from the top of the bluff. And they'll be going on further down than that. Next, please. This is some of the artifacts that you could expect to come out of that particular type of site. That's probably a photograph, too, right? Yeah, there we go. Is that Clear Fork gouge that we talked about, you saw in the drawing, is a some type of biface, perhaps used for a knife, a scraper, and a blade used for a knife in this area. Next, please. Some other large spear points or dart points coming out of the archaic time. This particular artifact on the far right, on the upper far right, is called a corner tang knife. It's much like the French knives you see in the fancy French knives in which the handle is set off at an angle to it. And we assume that's the way it was hafted. Next, please. Now, leaving the interior of of the southern Texas region and moving over to the western edge, to the Rio Grande and the Pecos Rivers. This is a site on right of a canyon right off of the Rio Grande River. This is taken from, I think, CK, from the inside of the shelter, looking out. Looking out, we're on the inside of the shelter now. Next, please. This is the side, the inside of the shelter, and you can see a person standing here. And as you look along this wall in here, you'll see some of the cave paintings that are in there, and we'll get some close-ups of these. But that shot that was taken just a second ago was probably made from somewhere in here looking out in over the canyon. Next, please. Here is one of what is called a shaman figure, one of the medicine men figures that appear quite often in the Pecos River and the Rio Grande area. The other types of drawing, perhaps you can, those of us who look at these make no assumptions as to what they are. That's what makes the fun of it. You can determine what you want to and make out of these what you wish. A water bug or what have you, whatever. Next, please. Some very light or very faint things. This looks perhaps like the rattlesnake figure, perhaps a rain symbol of some sort. Here again is another shaman figure. He's holding a staff of some sort. Next, please. Again, another portion of that panel. This man here looks like he's holding perhaps a spear thrower. Next, please. Here's a good shaman, and we think, we interpret, at least those that know, that write the most about it, interpret this to be perhaps one of the atlatls, one of the spear throwers. These dots appear in some of the other caves that we see surrounding these figures. We don't know what they mean, sir. Next, please. Now, moving on up into the northern part of the southern Texas area, this particular site is on the Guadalupe River north of San Antonio. It's called the Dan Baker site. It's a site that the Southern Texas Archaeological Association has been excavating for 13 years. On this site, we have found occupation from, if you remember the chart we had from the late prehistoric, that means somewhere around 700 A.D. all the way down into Paleo-Indian times, back into the 9200. We found the very bottom of a 4-meter pit, that's 12 feet, a Clovis point, which is one of the earliest points found in North America. It has been dated. So in this one site, we have a series of occupation that probably ranges from over a period of close to 9,000 years in one site. Let's move on to the next one, please. Now, we're going to, some general, this is some very happy folks down in there, or happy or something anyway. It looks like they had some of that Alsatian wine, perhaps, we talked about a while ago. These are good friends of ours that we work together on all that. They're excavating, and you will notice that these are controlled sites. These string lines come across here. All the measurements are made off of a controlled area, and we go down in increments of 10 centimeters. Everything that comes out. Next, please. Now they're back to work. Everything that comes out in this bucket is put through a quarter-inch mesh screen. Everything is saved, and everything is washed and cataloged and recorded. Next, please. And this lady is there. But you can see, if you look back on the profile of this, you'll see different areas of, you go down through, you'll see areas of burnt rock, pieces of accumulation of snail, which we have rather assumed they use for a food source. Next, please. Here's one of the deeper pits. This is Mr. Blackburn, who's here with us today, here in the very rear, bending over back there, and this is his son, Chris. taking a very accurate measurement. We want to know how deep he has to go. Dad, how far further do I have to go there? So he's still working there. And you can see the various layers of occupation in that side of that profile. Next, please. An overall view, and here again is talking about the screening process, that each of those buckets that come out of there are put through a screen, a quarter-inch screen, and put into a bag with that particular unit and what exactly unit it came out of and what depth it was at. All this is carefully controlled. Next, please. An overall view of it. We're moving from this site, this area up on the left, is where we began finding the late prehistoric, and as we moved towards the creek bed or towards the drainage area, it became deeper and deeper, the occupation became deeper and deeper, and it was way to our right down here that we found the Clovis point, down at 12 feet. And that's me walking away from work, is naturally right there. So, next, please. And there's me watching Mr. Chandler work right here. That's again, working in here in the early parts of the thing. Next, please. On this site, we found this is a hearth area right here in the very center, right below the sign. It's not unusual to find hearths. However, the interesting thing about this hearth, the fire break was still in place. They had this rock right above that sign, sitting upwards, running up and down in here, was still in place, and it was used as a fire. That rock would not normally, under nature, be set up like that, be laying flat. Next, please. Overall view of what a site looks like and the manner in which you open up large blocks so that as you go down, you're able to get a living surface over not just in one little area, but all over a small area, a large area. Next, please. And here's the lady again. She seems to be yawning and bored. She shouldn't be bored because here's a point that they've just recovered right down at the very bottom of the pit down there. What is that, CK?
Pertinalis.
That's Pertinalis, okay.
My bad.
That's what it is. Okay. Next, please. Nothing. Okay, we'll stop and go back now in just a minute. Let's turn it off. Now. Okay, turn it off now. No. Those are generally the sites that are around Medina County. Now what I want to do is to move over to the overhead projector for a minute and talk about a site in North Medina County. We're located on the map. I should have a yardstick, but I won't do it. Let me do this right here. See me here. Here's Medina County. It's the approximate line of the Edwards Plateau. So right about here is about where, that'll be great. About right here is probably Highway 90 running across here. Here's Hondo Creek coming through here. Here's Verde Creek. Now I guess where we are is about right here somewhere. Let me describe this area to you. This cave is located in northeast Medina County, above the western floodplain of the Medina River. It sits in the lower area of an 80-foot bluff. Let's look at the next one, please. But before we move that, Francis, wait a minute. What I want you to do is remember a couple of areas that we're going to talk about in a minute, but while we have this map, let me ask you to remember that somewhere south of Hondo, in this area, below 90, down in this area, we'll be talking about a site in just a minute here. And then just in a few minutes, we'll talk about another site right here near Castroville, in this area. Okay. So we're in Medina County now. This is the Medina River, and that's the entrance to that cave. And A large amount of occupation debris were recovered from this cave deposit, indicating that this cave was occupied throughout the Archaic period and into the late prehistoric, about 6,000 BC to 1400 AD, about 7,500 years, showing occupation in this cave. The mouth of the cave itself measures 19 feet at the maximum and extends about 17 feet back into that bluff. There's a maximum height back in there of 6 feet. There are two passages into the cave as you get further back into the cave, and there's a chimney in the ceiling that goes out and comes out the top of the bluff, which makes a very convenient chimney and smoke removal facility. Several horrors were on several horrors for fireplaces or fire pits were uncovered at depths of about 1 meter in the floor of the cave. The floor itself was tested to a depth of 2 meters. Let's look at some of the material that came out of there. We talked a little while ago about what they ate. This was, in addition to the plants and food and plant food that they were able to get throughout, these are some of the faunal remains of animals and that were found in the cave itself. Freshwater fish, drum, catfish, some kinds of frog, either a leopard frog and one unidentified frog, turtle, snake, bull snake, rat snake, racer snake, and diamondback rattlesnake. Birds, duck, teal, goose, and hawk were found in there. Bones. Next, please. In addition to those items, those types, we found turkey, mockingbird, a warbler, fox sparrow, and a domestic chicken. That was obviously historic times. Mammals found were opossum, bat, cave bat, black bear. Not usual, let me put it that way, but not unknown in this part of the country back many years ago. Raccoon, ringtail, striped skunk, gopher, squirrel, Mexican ground squirrel, cotton rat, the number of cotton rat and pack rat here found, individuals, beaver on the river, cottontail, domestic pig, domestic goat, white-tailed deer, cow or bison, dog or coyote. Their major food source, as indicated by this, probably were cottontail rabbit, deer, buffalo, probably buffalo instead of cow, may have been one or two domestic cows in there, and rats. Well, it was warm, good protein. Now remember, they ate everything that wasn't poisonous. Here are some of the tools that were found in that site. Let me move this way so y'all back there. Okay, thank you. Some bone tools. For awls, for piercing leather. Here's a piece of deer ulna that was used for flaking flint to make points or tools with. Some bone beads and a notched shell, perhaps for some reason. We don't quite know, but it was there. And here are some arrow points. Now, what I'd like to do right now is try to talk a little bit about a misconception about arrow points and what people seem to call bird points. These are arrow points. These arrow points, if you'll notice on the scale, are about 2 inches long. They're very tiny, what's called bird. They were used with a bow and arrow. They were not used to hunt bird with, though perhaps they were, but they were used to kill white-tailed deer with, buffalo, and all the other types of animals that were hunted. The fact that they were small, doesn't necessarily mean that they were not deadly. Very deadly because of the speed of the arrow. Next, please. Also found, as we go back in time, the larger projectile points are the dark points. These points represent a time period from early archaic, somewhere in the 6000 BC time, all the way up to around 1500 BC. Next, please. Mm-hmm. Sure. Is that all up front? That's left. Okay. In addition to the points and bone tools, many chip-sown scrapers, choppers, preformed pieces, knives, perforators were found in this cave. Also, painted stone and grinding monos were found, or the handheld stones that were used to grind with. Molluscan remains of river mussel, land snail, and land snails in large quantities were found. We're rather sure they used the land scale for the land snail for food, for a food source. In this area, about 300 about 300 yards north of this cave, an eroding bank showed some burned rock down to about 2 meters. At the very bottom of those, of that deposit, a Paleo-Indian point was found, recovered from that lower level of that burned rock midden. Below the dam itself, large numbers of artifacts have been obtained through surface collecting. There's a burn rock midden near this cave, which suggests multiple use of the site. Okay, now let's move on to the slide projector. And we'll talk about a cave now, another site. This site is located south and west of Hondo, on the north side of a small spring-fed creek. The narrow creek valley is a tributary of Live Oak Creek, 1.1 miles to the northwest of Live Oak Creek. It is situated on the edge of a gravel-capped hill overlooking a broad valley formed by the Hondo and Live Oak Creeks. The edge of the Edwards Plateau is about 20 miles to the north. Next, please. This is a small creek. The site is to the right of that creek. In this area here, back off in here. Next, please. Again, another, next, please, so to say, yeah. This was the surface of the site as it appeared when it was first found, and decisions were made to excavate it. Now, this site was excavated in 1987 by the University of Texas at San Antonio's Archaeological Field School in June 1 to July 1 of 1987. How many of you remember that we really got some rain in 1987 in that first month of June? These poor young people were out there. They were waterbound. They couldn't get out for about 6 days. They could hardly dig because of the mud. They could hardly get to their work, so they really didn't get as much done as they had hoped to do. They did, however, take out 21 square meters, which allowed them to expose completely a late prehistoric site. Most of the material culture was in the top 30 centimeters. Next, please. Next, please. This was the conditions. You can see the mud right out in front of the area where they had to work, and they're digging in mud back in here. Next, please. This is real messy type of job right in there. It's not a whole lot of fun, particularly when you have to take that out and you're hoping to screen or to cut through very nice dirt where you can pick up artifacts. Now it's all just one big ball of mud. But Perdee's arrow points, Bison and Dearbone, Edwards and Scallon arrow points, and Leon Plain pottery were found in these, in this first upper 30 centimeters. Late archaic and transitional archaic were also found below this prehistoric, late prehistoric component down to about 70 centimeters. Next, please. This is what that late prehistoric living floor looked like when it was exposed with the burnt rock and with the artifacts interspiced in this area, and in there are some horrors. And we'll get some close-ups of those in just a minute. Next, please. Instead of screening through a quarter-inch screen just by dirt, because of the fact that there was water available and it was muddy, they used water to screen with. They used the water and washed the water through the dirt, and this was called water screening. It's just as effective, but a lot more wet, and probably cooler too. Next, please. This is a hearth feature right in this area, right down to the left of the sign. It looks like another hearth right up at the very top of the picture, and probably perhaps a smaller one here. Next, please. Here are bovine teeth, bison teeth that were taken out of the site. On this site, which we don't have any pictures of, is this thing, a 1 meter by 2 meter unit was opened near the creek and produced a good sequence of prehistoric, late archaic, middle archaic, and early archaic material. Charcoal samples were taken for radiocarbon assay and produced the following dates. If you recall, on one of the pictures I told you about, what we call a Guadalupe tool, is that long piece of flint that looked like a gouge. They found one of those in association with charcoal. The date came out to be 4493 B.C., or 4493 to 4720 B.C. So we have a very early archaic component there. And the next level above that unit, at 80 to 90 centimeters, a Tortugas-type arrow point was found, or dart point was found. Also a very thin triangular blade, and the charcoal at that level dated from 3362 to 3598 B.C. Now, other diagnostic types were taken at each of the upper levels to date the deposits. So it tracked down all the way down because of the known type of diagnostic that were taken out. The material from this site is still being studied and will be reported on in future papers. That's about the end of this presentation, and Ray, if you'll turn the next one. That's generally how we end archaeological sequence, by a nice sunset. And it means the end of the day is over with and you can stop digging for a while. Thank you, Ray. Now that's briefly a very short tour of South Texas, some of the sites that we've seen, and how we're running on time. That's what I'm going to...
Questions, maybe?
That's what I was saying. If you're any questions, please, let's have them now, and we'll try to answer them with those people here. If we don't know, we'll tell you we don't. Yes, ma'am. It's just north and south of Hondo. Sorry. Yes, ma'am. I'm sorry. The hands.
They don't have
Well, they're very short and squatty and stuff. Yes, ma'am. Well, all of the stock, all of the early peoples that came to North America came from Asia across the Bering Land Bridge, Bering Strait. They all were a Mongolian stock. As they came into the United States, or they came into North America, they dispersed, and some stock went to the east and northeast, and some went down the coast, some came through here. You're speaking of the Leander lady, you're talking to the ones at Leander, Texas, that lady, the one they dug out at Leander, is that the one you're speaking of? She was dated at about, I think 7,000, wasn't she?
B.C.
About 7,000 B.C. She was of this stock. She happened to be, interestingly enough, a cripple. She was deformed. She was her age was guessed to be around 60 years old, which was quite old for her that period of time. She also had with her a sack of eccentrics, pieces of quartz, and a sewing equipment in a sack. We think probably she was, because she was crippled, or because she was treated with a lot of respect and was taken care of. She wasn't just thrown out in the outside and left just because she couldn't take care of herself. That says something about those people anyway. They didn't throw away their own people. Yes.
If you type this in a date.
That's a knife. It is not a projectile point. That doesn't mean it could not have been used as a projectile point. But if you're thinking that it's a plain view type, it is.
It is.
Just not ground one way. It is. It's probably used as a knife, or it could have been used as a projectile point, but it is not a plain view.
That was what I wanted to find out.
Okay.
Yes. Mr. Ward, what advice would you give someone that has a suspected midden or mound on their property?
Keep it quiet. Don't lease out your property to people who come in with heavy equipment and dig it up and run it through sifters and sell it on the antiquity market. Get in touch with one of us. Let us come out and record it, evaluate it for you. Leave it alone. Dedicate it in terms of your own family and its history. Don't plow it up, because we'll never know what new information and new techniques will come on in the next 15, 20, 100 years. It's still there. It's not going to go anywhere. Leave it for posterity. Don't dig it up. I do have one thing I want to say about the antiquities market. Fine, thank you. Lately, there's been a lot of things being sold in the market. People are selling arrow points and dark points at a great price. This is a beautiful piece. If you were to take that to the market somewhere and sell it, you'd get a lot of money out of it. You'd be fooling somebody, though this was made about 15, 20 years ago. The point is that it's difficult to tell. We can make them today just as well as they made them a long time ago. So that's... We like to go to Indians, we like to go to knives and gun shows, and we have some people who are pretty good nappers and stand outside or sit at our own booth and nap, see as they're selling next to each other. That's our way of saying, yeah.
I'd like to also comment that you need to watch your deer hunters. A lot of them are leasing hunting land to dig artifacts.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
I found a stone that grinds corn, makes mosses.
Mm-hmm. Mono. Score.
Looks like a white granite. You give me an idea about what time. Now, this was found where the REA put in an electric pole.
Mm-hmm.
It was on top.
of any age, because we rather assume that they ground wild seed for many years, and it was probably a mono that was, you know, used as a grinding tool against a metate or another stone of some sort. There's really no way to date it unless you have it in association with something that is dateable.
Right.
Yeah. It could have been moved up or.
Another question. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Cottonville. Did they have jackrabbit findings?
Yes, they did. Yeah, jackrabbits. And I'll have to. I don't know whether they had cottontails or not. This said cottontail.
Probably a mixture.
I'm not sure. CK.
Yes.
Jackrabbit. They're both jackrabbit and cottontail. Okay.
They also have antelope.
Yes, we have found antelope. We have found antelope in the site north of San Antonio, antelope and river otter, which was something we maybe not have been too surprised at, but it was kind of interesting to have that identified. But, and bison. Yes.
What tribe is southwest of primarily?
Well, we don't know, because the only people that we know that were named by the early Spanish that came into this area, and they named the different bands of Indians that went around. If they were in place when the Spanish came in, they probably called them Coatecans, which was a combination of Coahuila and Texas, and they called them Coatecan Indians. They had different bands in which they gave names to them. Some 85 or 90 identified bands have been identified by name through old Spanish records. We don't know. They had different languages. Some of them spoke perhaps a different dialect or something, because they were not speaking to each other in a lot of cases. So we don't really know. When you go back past colonial times, there is no names. We have no names. They were all of the same stock. They probably were different than some people in the Northeast because of diet, or how people just evolved differently.
North of the U.S.
Have any idea? Same thing. Anywhere. Yeah, anywhere. But they were all, they were all generally lumped under a generic title of name of Coatecans. And then within that grouping, they had various bands that had, like Paya, were here on the Medina River. Then later in historic times, other named tribes did come in: the Comanches, Wichitas, the Lipan Apaches, the Tawakanas, the Kickapoos came down through. But that's all in recorded time. What we're speaking of now is just, we have no idea, because there's no written record. No one to tell us what they call themselves. Yes, ma'am. I'm sorry. The Lipan Apache. The Lipan Apache, which was a break off of the Navajo as they came down through the Mescalero, and then the Lipan came to this part of the country. The Comanche came in, and the Kickapoo. There were some Wichitas that came in through here. Some Tawakanas, which lived around the Waco area, were latecomers into the area. The Kiowa have been reported in this area. And, of course, the Comanche. As I said, the Comanche. Yeah. Comanche, the Apaches ran the Coatecans out, or assumed or killed them. The Comanches came behind them and ran the Apaches out, or assumed and killed. And white people came in and moved the Comanches out. The name of the game, I guess it was.
Mark, I've read in the lore that the Indians might have dipped their arrow points into crushed mistletoe berries. Is there any truth, or do you have any idea what poisons they might have used?
Don't have any idea. No, I don't have any idea. It's likely that, as I mentioned, new more things are being discovered. We're being able now to identify, after thousands of years, some of the remains on artifacts so many years, the first thing we did was wash them real good, just scrub them off. Well, we don't do that so much anymore because we found that we can identify the lipids resources of the kind of fats that were in the material that was used on those tools. So we're very careful now about how we handle artifacts because we're able to identify some of the actual uses of those tools. So it's perhaps that somewhere along the line we'll be able to identify some poisons or some type of something that would stun. Let me, yes, sir.
Have you found any faults and points in your discoveries?
Faults and points that killed a bonfire, aren't they?
Yeah, bonfire shelter. The nearest Folsom points of any number in this area was over on Sabinal Creek,
mm-hmm.
River.
On Sabinal River.
Yeah.